my cancer diagnosis at the age of 32, my mom and I talked a lot about the shock of that diagnosis, given several doctors told us you're too young to have endometrial cancer. After much discussion, we began to feel driven to inform and help educate other young women about what symptoms they should be concerned.
Having both been teachers, it seemed natural for us to look for a way to share Alex's cancer journey in order to help other young women avoid such a shocking diagnosis or possibly navigate a similar path. A podcast seemed the best way to get the word out, and that's how Down There Aware was born.
4 years later, our mother-daughter duo has gone from educating and informing to advocacy and action, with a fresh and sometimes very interesting and somewhat humorous multi-generational perspective.
We look forward to sharing with you season 4 as we advocate, take action, and make it a priority to always be
Down There Aware. Welcome back to another episode of Down There Aware. If you are watching on YouTube, we had a little bit of a remodel. I don't know.
Just a change.
Just a little bit of a change.
We're experimenting.
Yeah. So if you don't know, we record this in my spare bedroom. And we just moved some stuff around, gave us a little bit different angle. Just trying to see. And you can fully see Sadie just chilling with us. So we thought that that would always bring joy.
She's learned when we're in here in these chairs that she needs to chill.
Yep. She just gets to sit.
She can come
calm.
In here and do it, or she can go somewhere else. And she just chooses.
She does. She just kind of like hangs out. And it's raining right now.
Yeah, so she's close.
So she does not want to be alone. She's been a little I worked from home today, and she has been a little
clingy,
a little shadowy. So
she does not like the rain.
No, she really doesn't. I mean, I kind of do, but
I do too.
She doesn't love it. So welcome back. We are excited to have another episode. And today I was thinking about what are we going to talk about? And a couple of news stories have recently come out, and I don't know if you've seen them, but Katie Couric, posted on her Instagram about the new recommendation from Preventative Something Task Force, something.
We'll look that up and put it on the website.
I'm really informed, really super informed. Anyway, you get the point. If you follow us on Instagram, I shared her announcement on our stories. Anyway, so there's a new recommendation that all women should start having annual mammograms at the age of 40. I believe previously it was 45 or 50. And so that's a great win for...
That's a step in the right direction.
Yeah. But her message was, as someone who has dense breasts, Katie, not me, I've never had a mammogram. She had to continue getting extra testing, and that requires an ultrasound, that requires this and that and the other. And this recommendation did not go that far. It didn't say that other testing would be recommended for people with dense breasts. And the issue with that is, I learned something, this recommendation from this task force is what informs insurance into what they have to pay and pay for. So
it always comes back to insurance.
It does. It always does. But this task force, you know, now if a 40-year-old, their doctor says, let's get a mammogram, you need to get a mammogram, it'll be covered. It'll be paid for. It's part of preventative maintenance care. But if you have dense breast tissue and you need follow-up tests or an ultrasound, it's not going to be covered. So Katie's message was there's a time period for public comment until June 5th. So there's still a couple weeks. So you can go and comment and say that it's important for that amendment to be made to their recommendation.
You know, it's one step at a time. And I think the medical community, and a lot of the reasoning is insurance, they're very conservative about changing those guidelines. But it's like, if you live long enough, every 10 or 15 years or so, a guideline changes. And I guess for me, the sad thing is how many people died in the interim because the guidelines weren't changed sooner.
Well, and it seems to be behind research.
Yeah.
Like lagging behind.
Yeah. That, like always trying to catch up
right.
with the research.
Because, you know, just thinking, how old was Kathy when she was diagnosed? She was in her 40s.
Early 40s.
So I don't think she would have been at the point. I think she had to find a lump to then. Right.
Right.
So, but if this had happened 20 years ago, 15 years ago, she would have already been getting her annual mammogram and it could have been caught earlier.
Right.
So, not saying it's not a good thing that has happened, but
it's a step in the right direction.
It's a step in the right direction. Could go a little further if it, for my preference, could just go a little bit further.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like colonoscopies. The recommendation used to be 50 and now it's 45, I believe. And, when I heard it reported, they said it changed because more and more young people are being diagnosed with colon cancer. Well, hello. Why just 5 years? You know, why not 40?
Mm-hmm.
Why not 30? If it can catch. And there may be a really good reason. I just don't know what it is. I've not heard it.
Yeah.
And I've not read it.
And I know that for, I'm not sure about mammograms specifically, but I know that for the testing that goes along with cancer or uterine cancer, it's a lot of MRIs, CTs, PET scans, and all of those have radiation. And so they try to limit your exposure to that radiation. And so I think that they're trying to do a good thing, but it may not always work out. And I don't know the numbers. I don't know, you know, the general population. Does that amount of radiation really affect you?
Well, yeah.
I don't know.
Well,
but.
And we touched on this last week about the risk, you know, do you risk the little bits of radiation to be able to rule out cancer or to catch it early enough to do better treatment or more effective treatment or not, you know, and it's a judgment call.
Yeah.
And right now it's not the patient's judgment call. Now, when we talked about it last week with your pseudotumor or
IIH,
it was the risk the doctor was willing to take, that the mother was not willing to take.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a different kind of risk, and the patient doesn't have any say-so in it.
Right. And even, I mean, I don't believe colonoscopies have any kind of radiation.
No, I don't believe so.
I mean, it's a scope or a camera of some kind. So,
yeah,
you know,
camera.
It's invasive. Sadie's like, y'all are talking too much. It's invasive, certainly, and there's prep and it's uncomfortable and whatever. But when you want to know if you had,
especially with colonoscopy,
and not just, I mean, colonoscopies diagnose much more than colon cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who is about my age and had to fight to get a colonoscopy because she was having gastrointestinal issues. And they're like, you're too young. Like, you don't need this. You don't need that. And it's like, but I'm having all these issues and you tell me that this isn't normal. So this is the next step. It is one of those things that it's a fight. And, you know, to your point, it always comes back to insurance. It's probably a fight just because of,
it's a money thing.
If they're going to cover it or if they're not going to cover it. So I always find that so interesting.
Well, medicine changes. And again, if you live long enough, you see a lot of it. Just things like hysterectomies. When my mother had her hysterectomy, which would have been in the early 60s, it was a major incision from, you know, hip to hip, and long, difficult recovery, especially if you've just had a baby, which that happens a lot of times. But when I had mine, it was a vaginal hysterectomy. And even though they do cutting inside, you know, internally, you've got incisions and, you know, damage, if you will. It really was just a couple days of chilling, you know, taking care of myself.
And mine was robotic.
Exactly.
So from the 60s, yours was in the early 2000s, and then mine was in 2019. So, you know,
40 years and 20 years,
and just the advancement in the, just the process and the recovery time, which is great. It's awesome that, I mean, I don't remember a lot of downtime for my hysterectomy. I was a bit of in a haze, so I'm not really sure of the timeline of that. But of all of the surgeries I've had, I think that was one of the easier ones
for as far as recovery.
As far as recovery goes.
But if you think about it, that was probably driven by insurance as well, because you're not in the hospital as long.
Yep.
You know, the follow up isn't as intense.
But meanwhile, I have mentioned on an episode before, I have a friend who keeps getting pushed back because she has a mass in her uterus and she wants to try and save her, not have a full hysterectomy, but save it. And the only way to do that is with a robot surgery. But because it's not cancer and because it's not emergent, she keeps getting bumped because where we live, there's one machine. There's one Da Vinci machine. And in a larger city, you're going to have more hospitals. You're going to have private hospitals that you can just go and say, hey, I want this on this day. And they'll go, okay, this is what it costs. Yeah, there's a lot. And it reminds me of when I had my angiogram and there was one room and one machine to do this procedure in. And I kept getting bumped because emergent stroke patients were coming in. I totally understand that. But it doesn't make the long day of being, you know, NPO, you can't eat and you're just
the weight.
The weight and just there's nothing to do. And yeah. So it's complicated, but at the same time, it just doesn't seem like it should be.
Well, and it's why I always like to preface my judgment with, I don't know everything about what goes into the decision making. I'm just speaking as a patient and the mother of a patient, excuse me, that, about my own frustrations.
Well, and I think that, yes, we don't know everything. We don't know all of the ins and outs of the insurance industry, and we don't know all the ins and outs of medicine and this, that, and the other. But your experience is valid to talk about and to have an opinion about, you know, what's going on.
And I do think the people who do make the decisions can learn from we peons who aren't in the decision-making realm to hopefully inform their decision-making to make more compassionate, better decisions. You know, in this particular situation, the change in medical decisions with the hysterectomy was a good one. It's good, was good for the patient, good for the insurance company, you know, good for everybody. But there are some that, like we talked about, are not. The colonoscopy, having the earlier testing, you know, the breast cancer mammogram.
It reminds me of, so my dad worked for Florida DOT, and whenever we would complain like, oh, that intersection needs a light, or oh, that intersection needs whatever, he would gently remind us that the only way it progresses, and right, there's a progression of, so an intersection has no kind of light sign, anything. And then it goes to, they get a stop sign. And then it goes to, they get a bigger stop sign. And then it goes to maybe a flashing yellow light before it's like a full on four-way stop. But he reminds us every time we complain about something like that, that the only way to make that progression happen is for people to die.
Yeah.
And for wrecks to happen. Quite literally, they will not put a stoplight at an intersection until there is at least one fatality. And I don't even know the number. I'm sure it's multiple. And so it just makes you wonder, why is human life so expendable? And it's just money.
Yeah.
It's just money.
Boils down to money.
It all does. And it's quite frustrating.
Yeah.
Healthcare is expensive enough.
This isn't specific to the medical community, but it just popped in my head. That's going to be dangerous.
there might be some edits coming. You'll know.
But talking about the thought process that goes behind decisions, mm-hmm. and how people don't know, and who it benefits and who it doesn't. When I was principal at a little private school, and we had a child development center attached to the school, when I came on board, it was part of the tuition for the school to feed all of the children snacks morning and night. Morning and afternoon snacks. It was part of what the parents paid for tuition. And what I observed was a lot of waste, because you have to buy in bulk, and every child doesn't like the same snack. So first of all, there was a lot of waste. Secondly, there were children who, if they didn't like the snack, they didn't get a snack. I mean, you put it in front of them, they didn't want it. So they went without a snack. And we know with children, they need nutritious snacks throughout the day, mm-hmm. not just, you know, meals. And so for me, that just resonated that we got to fix this. And so I wrote a lengthy letter because I wanted to explain it to parents. And I said, we're going to cut the, instead of me raising tuition this year, I'm going to ask you to pack snacks in your child's lunchbox. So, and I explained why. And most parents understood, were happy for the explanation, and were happy their child was going to get a snack they would eat and, you know, have that nourishment. A few parents just were mad because of the money. It's going to cost them more. So I felt like I was able to explain enough that most of the parents understood. But then if you look at the demographics, who was happy about it, who was not, it's kind of like that with all public decisions,
yep.
that are made. There are going to be people who just aren't going to be happy.
Yeah. Well, it's a bell curve, right? So like most of the people accept what you're going to do, whatever. Some people get mad and some people are like, oh, this should have happened a long time ago, whatever. But there are always the outliers. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, bringing it back to medicine, there are always the outliers. And why does our general policy, why is it so hard to get an exception, mm-hmm. when a physician who has a degree, went to medical school, went through residency, has years of experience, says this patient needs this test, or this patient needs this surgery, or this patient needs whatever? Why is it a fight with insurance companies?
Well, we talked about that in a previous episode, mm-hmm. with Will's pectus excavatum, and how the insurance company told me it was cosmetic, and I just about hit the ceiling. Speaking of talking about things changing, I've read recently Will's pectus excavatum repair was pretty extensive. He has an incision from armpit to armpit. For 6 weeks after the surgery, he had to lie flat. He could not bend at the waist. And so it was a really rough surgery and recovery. Well, now they have a procedure called a vacuum bell, and they put the vacuum on the chest and suck it up. And I think it's done in stages, and it's only most effective with children who are 16 years and younger. And I'm sure that's because of how our bones develop. But that's a huge change from what he had.
I've also seen that they do something similar with magnets.
I think you showed
that they've used magnets to adjust children with, you know, deformed sternums and things like that. So
those are good things.
They are good things. And it's, you know, it's good to have a way forward, and it's good for, you know, progression of care, and recovery time has, you know, gone down. How many times did your mother have a baby and was in the hospital for weeks?
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's not just
in the 50s,
maybe you go
and 60s.
Home the next day or the day after. Mm-hmm. And in the 40s, women were in twilight having babies. So, it's really important that we keep the research going. But I just wish that there wasn't that big hurdle. Like, we've had the research, we've done the study, and now we have to wait for a huge government decision or medical board decision or whoever it is. And I understand doing your due diligence. I just wish it moved a little faster, especially in today's society. Communication is at light speed now.
Yeah.
Internationally, we have more knowledge and statistics on lots of different things, not just in our own communities.
Yeah, we're more global.
Yeah.
Now.
So I just don't understand, like, let's catch up. Let's move forward. Medicine has moved forward, but I feel like it needs to pick up the pace a little bit, because there are still... if you follow John Green, so John Green is an author. I love him and his books. He wrote, I'm going to get the title wrong. Searching for Alaska. Anyway, it's a great book. Forgot
we'll
the title.
We'll
put it on the website. Anyway, so he is an advocate for tuberculosis awareness. Hmm. Tuberculosis is the number one killer across the world. Tuberculosis that we have had a cure for for decades. And so he is and it amazes me every time I see one of his TikToks or one of his videos about facts about tuberculosis and things like that. And so it's like, why we have the technology, why aren't we putting it into use, or why aren't we, you know, making it more accessible to people who need it? So it's just one of those things that we're always, I feel like, one step ahead, two steps behind.
We've said the same thing about cervical cancer.
Yep.
You know, we don't call it curable, but it can be eradicated.
Eradicated, yeah.
And, you know, it's like, why hasn't this happened? There's so much stuff involved.
We're going to put it on our TikTok. We're not going to do it in the podcast, because we want to talk about something in regards to the cervical cancer. So this is a plug. Go check out our TikTok, because there's some spicy content on there about the Gardasil shot and cervical cancer prevention and all of that. So check that out. We're a little more unhinged over there. But we are progressing forward
in some ways,
in others we're not. You know, it brings to mind the maternal mortality rate. Like, why isn't that better in this country, where, you know, we have all of the technology and so much money per capita, and all of why are women dying giving birth more so than in other countries? So I don't have all the answers, but I ask a lot of questions.
And that's a good thing. That's how you get answers.
Yeah. I just want to know. So, and there are a lot of people out there who are asking the questions and who are smart enough to be doing the research and doing all of those things. We need to continue to support those organizations and those researchers who are doing the Lord's work and figuring out what, you know, how we can live longer, live healthier, and eradicate horrific diseases that are easily preventable. Yeah.
So. And that's what we're trying to do, bring some attention to some of those things. So
that's all. I mean, that's all we can do, right? Yeah. Is just get the word out, spread the word. And so I want to challenge our audience today.
Uh-oh.
So if you have not subscribed to us on some kind of platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TikTok, our new YouTube channel, check us out. Subscribe. If you haven't rated us, given us 5 stars, if you like it, or left a comment, go do that. And if you haven't shared the podcast with someone who doesn't listen already, I think it's important to share content. I'm constantly sending my friends memes and things. Send a podcast episode.
Yeah, and all of the podcast episodes are on the website.
They're all on the website. They're all any, if you search Down There Aware on any podcast platform, you will find all of the episodes from seasons 1 through 4.
Yeah. So if somebody, doesn't know Alex's story, which really is what got this all started, they can go back to season 1, episode 1.
Yeah.
And kind of catch up on what got the ball rolling. Mm-hmm.
Or if it's someone struggling with infertility, we have a whole month's episodes in our first season about motherhood and becoming a mother in a different way. And we spoke with amazing women who have gone through all kinds of cancer. We've had doctors, we've had physical therapists. If you're having pelvic floor issues, we have episodes about that. So our challenge is like and subscribe somewhere, leave us a comment or a rating, and share an episode that you think will be impactful for someone else, because there's always opportunity to learn and get a different perspective.
Yeah, and I'll mention too, if you have a tween or a grandchild who's a tween or a friend who has tweens, we've got a great episode with Ellie Ray talking about when she started her mm-hmm. period, what it was like. Her mother was on as well, talking about how they prepared intentionally, but also very naturally, yep. how they prepared for that time, because it's going to happen. That's a great episode for young girls to mm-hmm. listen to with their moms.
Yep, exactly. So there's an episode for everyone.
Yeah, we think so.
We think so. And we're going to continue to make them because we like what we're doing. So thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next week. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Down There Aware. Be sure to like and subscribe on our new YouTube channel, as well as on your favorite podcast platform. You can find us at Down There Aware on all social media sites, Twitter, Pinterest, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. If you have it, we're there at Down There Aware. You can learn more on our website, www.downthereaware.com, and always get in touch with us, downthereaware@gmail.com. See you next week.